Welcome back to the Andrea Kay Show. It's hour two right here in the KCBQ studios. Glad to have you all here with me. Here to talk to me, you know, I teased it out. I promised you guys Gail Trotter at the top of the show, and we weren't able to connect on the phone because she's so busy doing all kinds of media. So I'm just excited that we were able to actually connect, and she is here with me, political analyst and commentator, none other than Gail Trotter. Hey, Gail, welcome to the Andrea Kay Show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Andrea.
Sure. Obama's speech last night. It's kind of like a Rorschach test. Is that what those things were called when they show you like a blob? Yeah. Or what's your Rorschach or whatever it's called on that speech last night? What was your initial impression?
Underwhelming. Rubio made the point after the speech that President Obama seems to be overwhelmed by the terrorist attacks. I am underwhelmed by President Obama's response to the terrorist attacks. And mm-hmm. I think Carly Fiorina had the best tweet on it. She said, this is vintage Obama. He has mm-hmm. no strategy, no leadership, and it's just politics as usual. What a missed opportunity, not only to restore faith and confidence to the American people, but also to send a message to our enemies, not only overseas, mm-hmm. but obviously those who are here now.
Right. To me, my initial impression was that it was not that he didn't have any strategy. My initial impression was this is a part of his original strategy. He said in his book, I will stand with the Muslims should the wind shift in an ugly direction. After the terrorist attack that left Americans dead in Benghazi, that was a direct result of his administration's foreign policy plan, as well as their failures to protect Americans. What did he do? He did just like they did here. He attacked the First Amendment, actually scapegoated in order to attack the First Amendment, a video, and he went to the UN right. and said the future does not belong to those who would slander the prophet. I put on Facebook last night, it's just a paraphrase of that speech to me. Tucker Carlson said that he spent 8% of the time talking about the Islamic terror and 29% attacking Americans. I don't know if those numbers are accurate, those percentages, but that's kind of how it read to me. I mean, Americans are attacked by an ideology. He comes out and basically lectures Americans to not badmouth the very ideology that left 14 dead. And shame on A.B. Stoddard, who said today that we needed to give him credit for giving his speech 4 days later. Really? Really, A.B.?
I think it was even worse than that. It wasn't just that he was saying that we were faulting this ideology. I think it was more offensive because he was not giving the American people enough credit that obviously they're not going to blame their Muslim neighbors, their Muslim sports heroes, that saying that for some reason that the American people were going to rise up and blame people who are obviously not responsible for what's going on. And yet he refuses to call the enemy by name, which is radical Islamic jihadism. And all of the strategies that you're talking about, attacks on the First Amendment, attacks on the Second Amendment, he's out there saying that, oh, we don't want to have this backlash against Muslims or the Islamic faith, but yet if we shouldn't hold Muslims at fault for the actions of a few radicals, then why is he trying to pin the actions of these criminals in not only Boston, but California and Paris? Why are we trying to pin gun owners with the fault of the actions of those criminal individuals who decided to, you know, basically take down unarmed people for their own warped political and religious ends?
Right. I mean, it's like when that crazed person went into a church in Charleston and shot people up. We had the Dukes of Hazzard being pulled off the air, Gail, because it was an indictment of the entire South, of which, you know, I was raised out of. But we're not supposed to think that there is an issue in Islam. And this woman came here. I found out this morning she was, you know, part of Pakistani refugees. I guess we've had 200,000 come here since 2001. And she studied in a Pakistani school that has branches even here in the U.S. where she learned this particular brand of Islam. And so you're right. I mean, it's an intention to dilute the argument by acting as though I'm going to go to my next door neighbor who's a retired anesthesiologist who's a Muslim who cooks the best upside down pineapple cake you've ever had, by the way. Yes. He's fabulous. Mari, love you. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's all because he doesn't want to admit it. My theory is, and I've been saying for a while that my theory is the reason why he doesn't want to admit it and doesn't want to call him out is because he is embracing Sharia and hardcore Islam has a Marxist element because it's about a centralized totalitarian government. And so Obama sees an opportunity to partner with these groups like CARE and others to as part of his alliance to transform America.
John Kasich doesn't usually say things that catch my attention or that I agree with, but he said, as his response to President Obama's speech last night, Kasich said, "Our rights aren't the problem. Our unwillingness to act to defeat extremists is the problem." Now, I might have also said radical Islamic jihadists instead of extremists, but right. It's not just that they're extreme. There are a lot of people who are extreme. It's the fact that they're violent and that they act on these violent tendencies. But I thought it's so true. I mean, we have it just absolutely backwards. We're taking the actions that will make us less safe. And on top of that, we're insulting the American people by saying, like you said, with your neighbor, that for some reason you're going to feel like you're going to act out against that. And right. That's obviously not the case.
Yeah. And something else it's kind of insulting to me is being told the manipulative tactic of, you know, we're not going to put boots on the ground because that's what they want. You know, oh, come on. And I don't know who this woman was I saw in this press conference this morning out of San Bernardino saying that the purpose of terrorism is to make us afraid to do ordinary things. So, you know, I'm not buying that. That, you know, and she goes on to say, and we don't want to, something about I can't remember what else she went on to say, but basically it was, we're not going to give in to them by not doing ordinary things. I don't think that, to me, is not what their intention is, and I don't want to be manipulated into she goes on to say, love will give us the strength to embrace the ordinary. That's supposed to be our response to radical Islam terrorists who want to kill us. Embrace the ordinary. Okay, I'm going to go buy some shoes today, Gail. You know, that's my ordinary daily routine. That's going to help us. No, that's such platitudes from the left that makes me crazy. You know how, you know, they don't want to face reality. The reality is, you know, love and ordinary activities are not going to defeat those that want to kill us. That is not a defense strategy. And that's what the
actions that we could take that would actually make us not feel afraid if we go into our ordinary activities. I mean, I'm not afraid, but I think that a lot of Americans would feel a lot safer if we had, you know, reciprocity on concealed carry permits across the states, across the United States. And I wrote a piece for the Washington Times about this a couple weeks ago. The District of Columbia is our nation's capital. ISIS has said that they are coming for New York, Washington, for these places that are iconic. You know, the Capitol, the White House, they're going to raise the black flag of ISIS over the White House as it burns down. They say this completely inflammatory stuff. And yet, our District of Columbia representatives will not allow people to easily obtain concealed carry permits. And if you had lots of people, citizens, who you couldn't tell that they were armed, then terrorists who think that they're all these soft targets would soon learn that the targets are not as soft as they think they are, and that would deter them or at least keep the body count down.
Absolutely. And that also about gun-free zones. The first thing that I thought of when I heard about this attack was I sent up a prayer, you know, for the families. And my second question I put on Facebook, was this a gun-free zone? Because that's something else. You know, we had American, we've got to talk about American citizens being allowed to carry guns. We've got military on installations that are not even allowed to carry, and at recruiting stations. I mean, it's insanity. You know, let's do the math. Love and ordinary activities does not protect us. Killing the people, the reality is killing those who want to kill us first, before they have a chance to mow us down. That's what we need to be embracing here. Hate speech. That was another thing. So Loretta Lynch comes out immediately within days and goes to, I think might have even been the next day, and basically threatens to prosecute anybody who supposedly says something that she thinks is hateful. That really made the hair on the back of my neck go up. What was your response to that?
It does, and as a practicing lawyer, I can't help but think about the next presidential contest and how vitally important it is to put someone in the Oval Office who will appoint justices to the Supreme Court, who will make sure that the First Amendment is protected. Because if we don't have the First Amendment, then we are not going to be able to keep our liberty and the way of life that we want in the United States. And I think people frequently forget that this presidential contest is not just about the policies that the president will have in the White House, the national security policies, foreign policy, any domestic initiatives. But the power of the president to determine who fills the chairs, you know, there are 9 chairs on the Supreme Court bench, who sits in those chairs determines whether our safeties and liberties, our constitutional rights are protected. And so when you see the left signaling that they're going to come after the First Amendment rights, which, you know, there's a legal concept that you can't use speech in order to incite violence, but you have to have the speech be intended to harm someone, and it has to be the threat of imminent harm. And other than that, the First Amendment really protects this, you know, speech that's distasteful.
It's right.
The whole thing about you can say something offensive, but I'm going to come back at you with other speech, not put you in jail for saying the wrong thing.
Right. And the people who, and there's many people who've told me, oh, that can never happen here. I don't know if you read the book While Europe Slept. There are elementary school kids getting arrested for words that are coming out of their mouth over there. This can happen here. We've got to protect our freedoms. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because too many Americans have forgotten about, we're hit with so many different stories and everything
right.
every day, Gail. People forget about, hey, we got to be paying attention to who's going to appoint who on the bench, because you look at some of their decisions and how they've impacted us, like Obamacare. This is absolutely critical. How can people get more information about you, Gail, before we got to go?
Yes, you can like me on Facebook. My website is gailtrotter.com, GAYLETrotter.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is my name, Gail Trotter.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being here, Gail. I appreciate it.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much. Love her and what she had to say.